It's Terry from No Crumbs Left, and I'm sitting across from Joe or Joanna Feldman. What do you like to be called?
I like to be called Joe because I hate when people call me Joanne. So if you can nail the Joanna, great. But otherwise, I think the Joe is fine.
Okay. I'm going to call you Joe. So this is fun because I'm going to ask you, okay. How did we meet?
Okay. Well, we met on Instagram. You're my one and only Instagram friend. Not like I have other friends on Instagram, but you're the only person I've met through Instagram because a friend of mine, Emily Wilson, who is a fantastic comedy writer, was following you forever, and she lives in Los Angeles now. She's from Chicago, and she posted a video of yours that was like, if you're ever homesick for Chicago, watch this woman. She's like so hardcore Chicago. Her food looks great. So I started watching you. And I just fell in love, and then I did a couple Whole 30s, and I just kept following you, and I think I started messaging you, like, questions. Like, you helped me with a heroin chicken at some point, and now I produce your podcast.
I love it, and this is the wonderful world of Instagram.
Yeah, there you go.
So at some point, Lucy and I were like, oh, we want to have this conversation, and this is really, I mean, how is the podcast born? But Lucy and I wanted to have a conversation about her journey. And we didn't want to do it, you know, on an Instagram Live, and we wanted for there to be a record. And so I said to her, well, you know, we should do a podcast. And I mentioned in a story, I'm thinking about doing a podcast with mm-hmm. Lucy, and you messaged me and said, you know, and what did you say?
I said, you should record your podcast at my office because I have a podcast recording studio at my office, which is a very unique situation.
It really is. And what did I say?
I think you were like, okay.
Okay.
Your game.
I love that. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I think
I've been trying to get you here anyway. Like, I was like, you could do a meetup here because our yes. kitchen is so nice. And we have this big theater. Like, we have all these resources in this office. But this was like the first thing that kind of worked.
I love it. Yes. Because yeah. that's how I think we'd message about other things. And
yeah.
you know, people at the Lincoln Park, what is it called? The Green City Market.
Uh-huh.
So there are people there that I've sure. spoken to. And so it's interesting because we've known each other a short time.
Yeah.
But you know me in really kind of an intimate way because you've been here for some unbelievably intimate conversations.
Yeah, I've just been like crying in the corner recording you while you have these incredible conversations with your family and your friends.
I love that.
Yeah.
And what is like kind of the behind the scenes and been like for you just doing that?
Okay, well, I think it's important people know that like off the bat when we met, like you came in with camera going, like you were like camera was rolling from the second I met you. We were like on screen. You are exactly what you present yourself to be. It was like you're 100% yourself, organic, and just like putting this podcast together, I feel like has been super organic. Like we've sort of like, you didn't really know what you wanted in the beginning. It was sort of just one way to capture one conversation. And then it was like, oh, people really like this. And you, I think, because you create your own content all the time, it's been an interesting challenge for you to be a host, right?
Right.
Like you're like interviewing people. It's this whole new thing. People usually interview you. And we've been sort of figuring it out together.
We really have. I mean, you know, it's like there's a learning curve. And when I started my Instagram and I had like whatever 44 followers, I mean, it's so fine to fail because like who cares?
Yeah.
And so you're failing all the time. And I am not afraid of failure. So I'm willing to always go out there and go way beyond what I know. But somehow doing the podcast is just this other thing where it presents a certain challenge for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm very comfortable being on a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
There's zero preparation. I go on. It's nothing.
Right.
But suddenly being in this position where I'm kind of moderating a conversation, it is, yeah, it's something.
Yeah. And I think in the beginning, you were putting this pressure on yourself to like be prepared and have all these questions. And then it was like, oh, you just talk to people.
Right.
And it's so much easier.
Right.
I think you're just becoming Oprah.
I love that. Sometimes people say that. I'll take it. She is definitely my most want to have dinner with or, you know.
Oh, yeah.
An afternoon tea with.
Oh, yeah.
So some of the funny ways that we're also intersected. I mean, of course, I brought Lucy in here. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about that. What was your experience with Lucy? And
I mean, you're so similar. You have like, you both just have this like insane dynamic energy. It's so clear how much you love each other. I think also like a big thing with your conversation with Lucy and also with all of your guests that you've had is like, I'm super pregnant as we've been doing this. And every week we sit down and I watch you have these conversations about like motherhood and mothering with like your own daughter or talking to your friends and your experiences with your own mother. So I like keep just learning and seeing all these amazing things. And the thing, my favorite thing, I think the first time I cried when you had Lucy on the podcast was when you said you were saying you never like came out of the closet, and Lucy said, "Oh, but you never put me in one." And I was like, "Oh my God! Like this like what an amazing gift for a mother to give their child, which is like to not assume a thing about them and to just let them be themselves." And that was like that was like the thing that this nugget that I think I repeated to every person I interacted with for weeks after that podcast.
I love that. Yeah. You know, people always ask me, you know, well, you know, Lucy's coming out story, but we really didn't have a coming out story.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't expect Lucy to be one thing or another. And there were times growing up that I wondered if she wasn't going to be more interested in girls than boys. And I remember like senior year, there was a girl I really felt she had a crush on. And I asked her, I said, "Do you have romantic feelings for her?" And she was like, "Oh, no, I absolutely do not." So I was like, "Oh, OK, well," she said, "absolutely do not." And it wasn't until her freshman year at some point where she said, "You know, I've got a crush both on a girl and a guy."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, I can't wait to see how it all works out."
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Lucy doesn't necessarily have that thing to label herself. Like, I don't think she says, "Well, I'm a lesbian." She definitely says, "I'm queer."
Yeah.
You know, and that from a place of really owning it and being it, not from that place of that word that I knew, which was practically as a slur.
Right.
So I love how that generation has reappropriated that word, and it's like they've taken it back.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's been great.
And it's cool to watch you, like, as a mother, as a person in a different generation than your daughter, you talk to her, you talk to each other like peers, like you respect each other like two adults. Not, you don't have this dynamic of like she can't teach you anything. She clearly teaches you a lot, and I see it as we record other episodes. You're really careful with your language, and you want to make sure you're honoring things Lucy's taught you. It's really nice to see you want to learn from your daughter.
You know, it's interesting. She came in fourth in the family. So Stephen and I, we had Patrick first. And I always say out of the four of us, Lucy is the deepest one. I mean, she is she's the wisest. And she's just, you know, I'm a small world person. And that may be hard to like look at me and say that, but I like my small world. I have my dear friends. I've got my routines.
Yeah.
I'm really comfortable with that. Lucy's a big world gal. She's always thought more about changing the world than I have, and in different ways. I mean, my life change has been, I want to get people in the kitchen cooking real food. And, you know, she wants to make a difference in a much more significant way. So there's a little bit like stand back and watch her go and, you know, and see, you know, who she is. And I'm excited because next week with the holiday, both kids are going to be home. So we're going to actually do a podcast with both of them.
I think the Patrick entrance is going to be huge.
You know, and he's a quiet behind the scenes guy.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, it's just Lucy and I doing this thing. He doesn't want to be on camera. That isn't what he wants. But I'm excited to have it. And we've been talking a little bit like what we're going to talk about. And it's like we're going to do some kind of like our funny family songs and family stories. And we've just been talking. So I'm excited. And he's actually very excited to meet you.
Oh.
Because he, by the way, loves Cards Against Humanity. And I think we should say, Joe, what do you do for a living?
Sure. I'm the co-head writer for Cards Against Humanity, which is a tabletop game. It's a card game. You either know it or you don't know it is what I've realized. So if you know it, you're like, oh, wow, that's a big game. If you don't know it, like my chiropractor who I just met, who looked at me and was like, oh, I don't care for video games. And I was like, well, we're never going to get there. It's a party game. It's a card game. It's been around for like 7 years. And I've been the head writer for almost 3 years. So I run a writer's room here in Chicago.
Ugh, that sounds like a fantasy job.
It is. I mean, it isn't. It isn't. Because like there, I definitely still like sit in front of a computer and do spreadsheets for many hours during my week, and like any job, there are parts of it that is a job. But I do also sit around a table with like some of the funniest people in Chicago, cracking each other up, which is a dream come true.
And how do you come up with these random, just these unbelievable questions?
We just brainstorm. We think of – it depends. Some weeks we'll have, like, assignments. Like, we're writing for something very particular. This summer we released our Pride Pack for Pride. We gave all of the money to Howard Brown Health Center in Chicago. So for that, we also brought in a bunch of queer writers. And we were, like – for a lot of us, especially for people that are not queer identifying, we sort of had to, like, take a step back and be like, what's funny for you? And try and format other people's perspectives into jokes. And then other times we're just free writing and we'll watch something really stupid just to get our minds going. We all watched Jumanji yesterday at work just to like try and see something different and see what's making people laugh these days. And sometimes we just tell stories in the room. We'll tell like our own personal anecdotes, and then someone will say, so they'll weave together words so beautifully, like a phrase so beautifully, that we'll write it down and that'll become a card. So a lot of times you'll read a card and you won't know it, but it comes from someone's real life.
And are you constantly, like, on my phone, I'm constantly making notes. I have the note section.
Yeah.
I am constantly working on this recipe or this takeover or this meetup we're going to do. And I have, like 1,000 notes going. What is your sort of system? Because you could be anywhere hearing something fabulous.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll write stuff down. I also, my husband is a writer. So sometimes we'll just be talking and something will make us laugh and I'll just be like, ooh, write that down. And he'll write it down. Or we just try to remember it for work the next day. But I really try not to do too much work outside of the office. That's a thing that I had to work on this year, which was like, it's okay to leave the job at the office and then go home and just be a person.
How does that work? I don't. That's an emerging skill for me.
Sure. Well, because you work at home too.
It's not even an emerging skill. It's not a skill for me. I'm just wondering. And people in my life
struggle.
Roy would like me to hone that skill.
Sure.
He would really like that. How did you make that happen?
I used to perform for Second City in Chicago. And there was a thing when you're trying to like come up as a comedian in Chicago where you just want to be seen all the time and you want to do shows every night. And I missed important things for other people by doing that. I missed weddings and like bar and bat mitzvahs for like family members. And I think at one point I was like, I'm not gaining anything by missing other people's things. Like the big opportunity, it just isn't going to happen at that one night where I gave up going to like support someone or like do something I love. And I'm like less interesting by doing more shows. I become more interesting by hanging out with my friends and talking to people that don't do this stuff. And I think it was a slow transition of me realizing that life stuff comes before show stuff, which is a thing that I've said to my husband when we started dating, which was like, I'll never want to go to a show more than I'll want to hang out with a friend, like if there's something special going on. And that's something that I had to learn about with having like a real job, because after working at Second City, which is like you piecemeal all these gigs together, this is a 40-hour a week job. So like, I don't want to take it home with me. I want to leave it here and I want to go be a person afterwards.
I love that.
Yeah.
And you got the kind of dreamy husband. Let's just talk about him for a minute.
I do have a dreamy husband. His name's Andy Kushner. He's a really great comic writer. He used to perform. He doesn't much care for performing. He doesn't like being on screen or on stage. And we embarrassingly met doing a Jewish improv show called Mazel Prov, which is a now defunct Jewish improv group in Chicago. And we've been married for a little over 2 years. We've been together for almost 6 years. And he's just like a fantastic writer and director. He's written pilots that went to the New York Television Festival. He's wrote for a TV show in L.A. for a little bit. He's just one of the most talented people I know and the hardest working.
How does a person end up writing for, like, what is your prerequisite to get here?
For him, like, for Cards Against Humanity, well, for this job, actually, so Julia Weiss, who's my co-head writer, we were both touring at Second City together, and she knew the guys that ran Cards Against Humanity through another podcast she did called Improvised Star Trek, which is a great podcast, and they had her come in for a brainstorm for a holiday thing they were doing for Hanukkah. And they just said, like, if you know any other funny Jews, bring them in. And she was like, I know a funny Jew. I tour with her. So she brought me in. And we did a brainstorm. And a couple months later, they just out of the blue emailed us and said, we want to start a writer's room. Do you guys want to be in charge of it? And so they let us ask, like, 20 of our friends to apply. They picked their favorite of the group. And then that's how the room started. And when they picked their favorites of the group, I was like, just so you know, one of them is my fiancé. So if that's a problem. But they were totally cool with it. So that's how Andy got that job and how all the writers did. And then for, like, his TV writing job, it's really amazing. You can get those jobs through, like, an agent or a friend sending you a writing packet. So for him, a friend sent him a writing packet. His writing was in a pile of hundreds of other people, and they chose him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like kind of a dream job for a writer.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Definitely.
And you work in pretty much the coolest office that I have ever been in.
Yeah. I think it's like a cartoon version of a millennial office. Like,
totally.
It's what, like, I think my parents are like, I thought they'd be really impressed when they saw the office, but they liked that we had like free glasses cleaner the most.
Right.
But we also have like a Moroccan meditation room, a Zen meditation room, a hunting lodge room, recording studios, a theater, and a crazy kitchen.
It's actually like, I look forward to coming here,
you
know, and it's just like there's something so fun and the vibe is so fun and it feels really, really vibrant.
I know you're always threatening to get a desk here. You got to do it.
I keep thinking Zach and I could get a desk here and we could be here like one day a week or something
because
it's so important. I work at home. It's so important to get out. We used to go to the Soho House one day a week and just work from there. But it is really, really loud there and it's actually hard it's hard to do it.
To get stuff done. Yeah. Yeah, come rent a desk here.
I love that. I'm thinking about it. So what I want to ask you is you're about to be a mother.
Yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about the podcast with Amy.
Okay.
So we did the one on 50s and reinventing ourselves, and Amy is a doula.
Yep.
And how did it then come to be that she's going to be your doula?
So Amy would like pop up in your Instagram stories, Amy Owen. And I went while she's like popping up and I'm like remembering her face and from your Instagram stories. I was looking for a prenatal yoga class to go to in Chicago. And I went to Yoga View, which is where I used to go before I was pregnant. And I saw the prenatal teacher was Amy Owen. And I knew the name, but I didn't connect it. And then I sat in her class and I was like, that's the woman from Terry's Instagram stories. And I felt like a total creep. But I loved her. And she knew so much. The way she talks about pregnancy, and she checks in with every woman before their class. Also, her class is packed. Like, every woman, pregnant woman in Chicago wants to be in that class because she really checks in with you, and she's really calm and measured and, like, not overly concerned about anything. And she mentioned that she was a doula in the class, and I was like, ding, 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 ding. And then I think I emailed her, and then we were, like, we had had like one conversation about her being my doula when she came and sat in with you. And I was like, it was like perfect. I've been very lucky to like sit in and be like, just watch people get to talk about the things they know so much about and be like, I would like you to help me do this. And she's helping me, unless I have to have a C-section. So you never know.
And she'll still be there if you do.
I know. She's the best.
I love it. Yeah. So the idea of a doula is so nice. I didn't have one.
Yeah.
I sort of went with, you know, kind of a traditional birth. And it was a little bit traumatic.
For so, both of them?
Really was for Patrick.
Yeah.
I mean, I had back labor and, it was really tough for Patrick. For Lucy, I had gotten a little smarter. And I was like, I need to be my best advocate. I need to talk to my doctor. I need to say, hey, I want to make sure that you're here. I want to make sure I needed to have a birth plan. So yeah. I didn't really on the first one. And I did on the second one. And I would say things went much smoother on the second one.
Yeah. I'm always amazed when people can just, like, go through big things like a birth without planning it. I have a friend who's Israeli, and she had a baby this summer. And I was like, what are you reading? And she was like, nothing. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what classes are you taking? How are you getting ready? And she was like, well, it's going to happen regardless, so I'm not going to freak myself out with information. And I was like, well, I live in a totally different land. But it is, yeah, it's so intimidating because you don't know. And it's for your first baby, you don't know. I don't know anything about how this is going to go. It's totally scary. It freaks me out. I think about it all the time.
So do you know if you're having a girl or boy?
Yeah, I'm having a girl.
You are. Oh, yeah. My gosh. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
That's kind of exciting.
I know.
Although I've had one of each and they're both pretty fabulous.
Yeah, I feel like you can't really go wrong,
you
huh?
You can't go wrong.
You just can't. But it is still funny when people ask and they're excited, especially people that don't know you. Like the nurses at the doctor's office are always like, oh, wonderful. And I'm like, yeah. What do you care?
Right.
When are we going to see you again?
Yeah. But they do care.
They do.
And it depends on your life experience. I mean, I grew up, you know, two sisters. So there's three of us, my mom. So the mother-daughter experience was really, really important to me.
Yeah.
And so I always thought, of course, I would have girls. And then, you know, I got pregnant with a boy. And I was a little bit like I didn't grow up with brothers and things. I just wasn't sure, like, if I'd know what to do and how I'd be a mother for a boy. I actually think I'm a really good mother for a boy. And so I think it all worked out. And, I mean, nobody loves you the way a boy loves you. They love their mom.
That's what I hear.
And it's really sweet and wonderful.
My sister has two boys, and she really loves them. But I also, like, I grew up, like, in a pretty female-centric situation. My mom was one of three girls, and she was raised by just her mother. So she was like, it was always about women for her growing up. And then I have a sister and a brother. And there is just something special about my bond with my mom is unreal. Like, she is just, I get a kick out of her more than anyone else. She is like my best friend. And then sometimes it like really freaks me out to think that there was a girl born before me that like she has my sister too. Mm-hmm. And I think they have like, they have a great relationship also, but there's just nothing like what me and my mom have. And I'm like, what if my firstborn is like not that person I click with? Right. And I got to go two more babies to get that third one.
Well, I think in the moment you probably wouldn't even know. I mean, I'm just saying, you know, I think my mom probably really connected with all of us. But, you know, of course I feel like, we had that special.
We all want to feel that, yeah.
Special connection.
Yeah.
And I know that you're really close to your mom. So what is it you think about having a baby now? Like, what are your thoughts?
I think, like, I get so excited. A thing I read about was for, like, hypnosis for labor was to start picturing 2 weeks after your after your delivery and picture what it's like. And the thought of watching my husband parent is like the most exciting thing in the world to me, is how lucky that this girl gets to be raised by this man makes me really excited, because he's so sweet and he's like such a feminist, and it makes me so excited, the thought that a girl gets to be raised by a man that doesn't believe in like manly virtues, that is like just a really wonderful advocate for women. And then I think, like, I'm so freaked out that our life is going to change, that we're going to have less time together, that the idea of us is over. Like, I get sad about that. And then I get really excited that, like, this is the beginning of us not putting so much pressure on us, like, and so much attention on us, and getting to, like, put it on somebody else and, like, shift our focus and be less selfish and, like, watch someone else become a person that we have no control over and just take care of them and do it together. And, like, it seems... It, like, just like the most fun adventure for Andy and I to have together is that we get to have a person and be a family, which is really exciting. But I'm totally freaked out about the birth, and it, like, I, that's the thing that like when I wake up in the middle of the night, I'm just so freaked out about giving birth, having a baby, surviving. It just seems like too much.
Right. What you have to do is you have to look around the world and think of all the people you know who made it through.
Right.
You know, and yeah. Somebody told me that when I was pregnant, was like, there was a particular woman. It was like, she made it through. And you kept going, okay.
Well,
Bobby Newman made it through.
Yeah, yeah.
I could do it. So it's just like, you just somehow make it through. And you look at all these women and go, you know, we were better for the experience.
Yeah.
And it's definitely like, it's a paradigm shift. It's big. But it's, you know, it's just like you give birth to someone that you love as much as you love Andy and as much as you love your mother.
Yeah.
So it's not less, you know, it's more.
Yeah.
But I think in the moment you're in, that would just be exactly what you'd be thinking.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a really lovely marriage and you're like, oh, well, you know, we've had this thing and now we're going to have this other thing.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, why are we rocking the boat? What are we doing? We have this good thing going.
Yeah.
But it seems like a thing I can't comprehend yet, how big it will be. But pregnancy is like a wild ride, and I can't believe people do it so many times. It just seems – I guess some women really take to it.
Some women really take to it. I remember it'd be like those women who are glowing during pregnancy.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, here's the reality. It is a very small group
yeah.
of people who just, like, they love being pregnant.
No.
I love being a mother.
Yeah.
And it's a means to an end.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't that for me pregnancy itself was joyful.
No.
No, no, no. No, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've had, like, kind of an easy-ish ride, but still it's not like – I was breaking out in my first trimester, and I said to my doctor, I was like, what about the glow? And she was like, oh, no, that's acne. That's not – that's oil. Like, there's no glow.
What do I do to get the glow?
Yeah, she was like, where's that – where am I supposed to be getting a glow at some point? Like, where are the amazing boobs? And she was like, yeah, it's just different for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, lady.
Well, I love all the places that it takes you. I mean, for me, and I've always said this, mothering is truly my north. You know, it's the thing that I was the most natural in the world to
yeah.
me. And I mean, it wasn't like before. Like, I remember even babysitting my sister's kids. I wasn't really natural with other people's children at
yeah.
all. But there's something that happens when you give birth, and the way that you love your kids, it just changes a part of you. And it is so much who you are that it is life-changing in a big and wonderful way. And it's a love story. It's like the greatest love story of your life.
Yeah.
You know, because how you feel about your baby when your baby's born, it just it's more and more and more. And, you know, how I feel about Lucy and Patrick is the way you're going to feel about that little baby. It doesn't change, you know?
I know. I'm so excited. I have always before – I was never like the type of person that could picture getting married or having a partner or like a man or a wedding day. But I could always picture a little girl. I just always could picture that I would just hold hands with a little girl one day and that I would be her mother. So I do feel like this is a thing that I've just always known that I'm supposed to do. And that makes me – that reminds me every time I get freaked out that, like, no, you knew this. This was always going to happen.
And you have your – you know, I mean, I know you have some wonderful women around you and you
yeah.
have some support. And so tell me about that.
I got a good community.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a big thing for Andy and I, too, is community is huge for me. I grew up in, like, a big Jewish family, and my parents had a jewelry store outside of Detroit. And their store was like, there's cousins and uncles and aunts coming in. And I just grew up with, like, people on top of people on top of people, and talking over each other and loudness and in your face. Everyone's in each other's business. People are arguing, but it's always, like, for good. And I just grew up in a cacophony of sound of loud Jews. And like that makes me feel comfortable knowing I'm surrounded by people, knowing that like if I have news, I have to text like 15 people. There's like 15 people I owe the information to.
Can you do a group text?
Yeah, like I can't because I can do it for some of them. I can hit up some cousins and an aunt, then like the three best girls from Detroit. Then I got to get two other girls. Like there's all these women that I have to inform things to, but they don't necessarily want to be on a group text with each other. So I got to send out like a bunch of messages. And if I forget one of them, then it's like horrible.
Right.
So I feel very lucky that I have like a bunch of people that care about me. And I feel like really lucky. A thing that I heard was to prepare for birth is to assemble your seven sisters, which is like a woman for every day of the week or a person for every day of the week that comes over and does one thing to help you, be it like take out your trash or like someone's going to go and do a grocery run every Tuesday for you or do your laundry every Wednesday or just come like hold your baby on a Thursday for an hour while you shower. And I was like overwhelmed at how lucky I am that in Chicago, where I didn't grow up, I do have seven sisters. I have groups of so many people that want to help us raise a baby. It feels overwhelming.
And you've got to let people do it. I mean, community is everything, and women have to work together, and of course men do too, but in this case we're talking about women and having babies.
Yeah.
But it's like you've got to let the community support you and cook for you and carpool with you. We just really, as people and living in this crazy climate that we do, we've got to support each other. And it's just so important as a mother to say yes. And people are looking for opportunities to do something. So my thing always has been, if somebody wants to help, let them.
Yeah. It's hard to ask for help sometimes. And I realized that through my pregnancy, even like I'll sometimes forget that it's okay to ask my husband to like help me put socks on my body because I can't bend over. Or like, can you get me a glass of water? Or even at work, like asking a coworker, can you actually like grab that chair for me? I don't have hands or something like that. Those little things are difficult. We're programmed that like strength is independence. And I think like strength is community. But we're just taught to be able to do everything by ourselves. But I do have a friend organized a meal train, which is like
I love it, and I want to be on it.
I mean, that is the best if you're on our meal train.
Because when is what when, do you, when do you do?
December 6th.
December 6th. Yeah. Okay, I want to be on the meal train.
She's coming.
Okay, yeah. I love it. Do we have a name, or are we not?
It's a secret till she's born.
I think
there's
it's
all
very
these like
good.
Jewish I was gonna say stereotypes, which is also true. But there's like superstitions, like you don't name the baby till the baby's here. You don't buy anything for the baby till the baby's here. All of these things that make you like worried that something's gonna go wrong until.
Okay, I'm gonna predict
here.
It's an S name. I don't know why.
Okay.
Well, I'll know soon enough.
I'll let you know.
I want to get on the.
We'll keep in touch.
The food train. So I want to tell just a funny story about. And this is before I met you. I mean, this is just the weird way that our lives, you know. So I'm in Aspen. I'm with actually Amy and John. And Amy shows up on the stories very regularly. She's one of my dear, dear friends. And everyone's like, she looks like Brooke Shields. And Amy and I did the podcast, you know, I think I said about reinventing yourself at 50. And so I'm walking down the street. And this very handsome man says to me, hello, no crumbs left. And I said, hi. And he said, you know, I love you and I know crumbs left. I love No Crumbs Left Kid and all of that. And he's just handsome and young and fun. And a lot of times when people run into me, I say to them, do you want to be on the stories? Because people really like being on the stories.
Oh, yeah.
So and one of the other things he said is that Joanna Feldman, you know, loves you and all that. My fiance's here. And so the fiance comes over. And so I said, let's do a story. And we do a story. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we love you and No Crumbs Left Kid and all of that. And then I say, and let's all say it together, and then we go, let's go. And what's funny is Beck does it, but Jesse, who is certainly a fan, is like, doesn't do it. And then it's like, I missed it. I missed the let's go and all of that. It was really fun. So put the stories up. I don't think another thing about it. People start contacting me going, do you know who that is? Do you know who that is? No idea who that is. So tell us a little bit about who was that.
So that was my dear friend Jesse Hodges and her husband Beck Bennett. And Beck Bennett's on Saturday Night Live, so people were probably contacting you going crazy for Beck. And Jesse's also an incredible actor, and she's on a bunch of different TV shows. And they're a really lovely couple. They just got married.
They're so lovely.
Yeah.
And then I saw her. I was watching, I think, A Woman's Guide to Divorce or something, whatever.
Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. Great. Bravo TV.
And love Bravo. Let's not even get into Andy Cohen and how much I love him. He would be number two on the dinner list.
Love Andy Cohen.
And so I'm watching this episode. And I'm like, this woman is familiar to me, but like she's really familiar to me. Like I feel
like I know her.
All of a sudden I realize, and then I look her up and I was like, were you on that show?
Yeah.
And then since then, she had, you know, Lucy have been messaging, and, you know, Lucy's wanting to, she got signed with an agent,
by
the way. It's very exciting. So that was just an interesting,
yeah.
another thing where you and I have led these things where, you know, you got Amy from me.
Yeah.
You know, they found out about me from you.
Yeah.
Now Lucy and, you know, Jesse have spoken, and it's just interesting how
it's a small world
and just meeting you it was just like right away I felt that sort of soul connection, mm-hmm. like 100%, you know, just be yourself. You know, it's like I could be practically clumsy. I come in. How many beverages do I bring during the podcast?
You usually have a big an unsweetened iced tea.
Yes.
Probably your own water.
Yes.
Then we give you a water because you like the mason jar. And today you're drinking another water,
yeah.
a carbonated beverage.
It's been a busy day for me. I mean, it's so fun because I stay
hydrated.
Yeah, it's just like I get out of the office and it's so nice for me to come somewhere that feels magical. And it's like I can have as many beverages as I want. And
that is the thing about Cards Against Humanity. We have a lot of free drinks here. We have a really generous refrigerator. Yeah, so, I feel like we've had weird intersections too of people of connecting each other in different ways in different ways to help each other. I think I texted you this, but Andy and I do this thing on Shabbat every Friday where we do our roses and thorns for the week and then a bud, which is something we look forward to. It's a little tradition. And a couple weeks ago I was saying my rose is really meeting you and doing the podcast with you because I just get to sit here and like listen, and I just get it's like free therapy, free life lessons. It feels unreasonably lucky that I get to sit here and hear you talk with other women, amazing women, and one man so far, and just gain all this knowledge. It's the best.
Well, thank you. I can't, you know, I get teary eyed almost every time, but it makes me teary eyed because it's not so often that I really let somebody really help me in a certain way. If you work for me, I let you help me a lot, but you know, but I'm saying if you're in the kitchen, but. You know, just and so to, you know, to do it. And then it was like you were nice enough. You did it once. And then it was like, well, could we do it again? And then before you know it, we're doing it every week. And I had a lot of guilt like, oh, gosh, I don't want to have roped her into something. But you've been it's such a gift to me because it's, you know, we all are transitioning all the time. I'm way over my skis with the podcast. I love it. And it is the highlight of my week right now. It just feels so separate from everything that I'm doing. And we come in here and we put the phone on airplane mode.
Pretty big, yeah.
And we close the door and you and I don't even like to be in small spaces.
No, we immediately both try and fight panic attacks.
I'm like, should I have a Xanax in the purse? And we've closed the very big door.
But now that we know that we both feel the panic, doesn't it feel better?
100%.
Yeah, every single time I'm in here. And I'm in here throughout the week. Multiple times.
I mean, and now because I also just feel so at home with you and so comfortable and you've bared witness to some very intimate conversations and everything. It feels just kind of like your family.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm like, yeah, Joe and I are locked in the room. And thanks so much for coming on this side of the curtain for us. But I want to ask you something else, which is you do your own podcast and tell us about it.
I do. Well, I was going to say I love also producing your podcast because I went to college for radio broadcasting and audio production, which was like a huge waste of my time and my parents' resources, a thing I feel constant guilt about. So the fact that I get to like record your podcast is a once a week reminder that like, hey guys, didn't totally throw it away. You know, I have to ask a lot of questions to people when I have problems, but I'm still working on it. But I do have a podcast with my friend Jack. She's also a writer for Cards Against Humanity. She's so funny, Jack Felker. We do a show called Two Smart Business Women. And we basically, the whole idea is that it's Shark Tank, no follow through. So basically once a week, a friend will ask us a question and then we turn it into a business that doesn't exist that we never intend on making into a real business. But I would say, like, when we started the podcast, it was like 15 minutes of us kind of talking about our lives and pop culture and then 15 minutes about the question and the business. And now it's like we get mostly carried away talking about ourselves, pop culture. And then, like, when there's like 3 minutes left, I'm like, oh, my God, we have to get to the question. And we get to it at the end. But it's always a different way to help somebody. And it's, for me, also the most fun part of my week is that I get to come in here unplanned. I don't have anything written down with my friend and we just talk and we don't have to really think about it too much. We just get to be ourselves, which I think is like the best part of most podcasts. And I think it's why people like listening to people they like, just be themselves. And it's been the best. And you've gotten me some loyal listeners.
I love it. Well, I'm going to continue to do that. I like shouting you out. And I would be remiss in not asking this. I know, and you probably can't tell us, but Cards Against Humanity does some kind of a special promotion day after Thanksgiving. So is there going to be another good one?
Oh, I can't tell you.
You can't tell us, but we should be we should be following to find out, or we should do what?
I think you can be on like the Cards Against Humanity mailing list to be the first to find out if there is anything happening. Okay. You just never know.
You never know.
It's always good to be on that list. Okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. You know, first of all, thanks for the gift of this podcast.
Oh, sure.
Thanks so much for being the guest today. And it's going to be fun to do a follow-up later and just, you know, talk about in 6 months, where are you at with mothering and, you know, what were you initially thinking and how is it, you know, and to share a little bit of that journey. And you don't have to think about it now because it'll just naturally happen and it'll be fun to do a follow-up.
I can't wait. I know at this point I'm like, this baby's coming, so it's going to, we'll have a follow-up.
It's any minute.
Yeah.
And I was born Thanksgiving, so I highly recommend it. But we've got a special podcast the week after, so hopefully she can hang on another
week. I'll try,
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to be sure to on the we'll be sure to tag where they can find you and all that, and they can come over and find me on Instagram if they don't know, and I'll do that. But it's Terry from No Crumbs Left signing off. Be sure to come find me on the blog or at No Crumbs Left on Instagram or Facebook. Have a great day, everybody.